Good morning and welcome. I'm Michael Kelly, and I'm the lead program manager for the product development team at Microsoft that does Linux on Hyper-V, Linux in System Center, and Linux in Azure. And yes, Microsoft does love Linux. This slide was presented by our CEO, Satya Nadella, at a briefing last week for a bunch of press and analyst people. This is a great slide. Wow, this is quite a change from the Microsoft of a few years ago. And for the first time even, we now have a demo station down in the Tech Expo in the Microsoft section that's labeled for Linux. So things are changing. Of course, you're here probably because you're a Windows IT pro. Maybe you're using Hyper-V to run Windows workloads, or you're using System Center to manage those same workloads. But maybe you're also being asked to take a look at whether you can use that same infrastructure to run and to manage Linux. How many people are actually using Linux on Hyper-V today or using System Center to manage Linux? Okay, actually interesting good number there. Who's being asked to take a look at whether you can do that? A few people doing the same thing there. Excellent. So that's what's really going to drive the agenda for this session today. It's going to be a broad overview. You heard Jason Zander talk yesterday in the keynote about the Microsoft Cloud. I'm going to talk today about how Linux fits into the Microsoft Cloud. What we hear, of course, is customers saying, yes, I'm running Ops Manager, I'm using System Center to monitor our Windows systems, but I'm also being asked now, what can I do with my Linux systems as well? From an agenda standpoint, we'll do a few more intro slides, and then we're going to break it into two parts. We're going to talk about running and deploying Linux with the System Center components, such as Virtual Machine Manager, such as the Azure Pack, and then we'll talk about managing and monitoring Linux with Configuration Manager. Desired state configuration, that's part of Windows Server, not part of System Center, but that's an interesting part of what we're doing in terms of the overall managing and monitoring of Linux as well. Ops Manager, Orchestrator. So that's kind of how we'll wrap things up. Why is Microsoft doing Linux and Unix in the first place? I get that question quite frequently. And the reality, of course, is the world is heterogeneous. It's been that way for a while. Microsoft gets that now. Yes, you've got Windows, you've got Linux, you've got Unix. And cost is driving, what we hear from customers is cost is driving toward wanting a single unified infrastructure. One cloud running both Windows and Unix and Linux. One systems management infrastructure that you're using to manage your Windows and your Linux and your Unix. And so with that common infrastructure, consistent interfaces, consistent protocols, consistent view in the ops console that you're managing things with, seeing both your Windows and your Linux machines, consistent processes, the experience that you as an IT pro use to manage those things. I'm going to focus today on server workloads. Our Linux and Unix work has been around servers, not around desktops. There certainly is a whole heterogeneous world out there in the client space with smartphones and iOS and Android and tablets and so forth. Conversation today, that's a different session. Conversation today is going to be around servers in your data center, whether you're managing them as physical devices, whether you're in a virtualized world, whether you've really gone to a true private cloud, or whether you're working in the public cloud. So we want our Linux and Unix capabilities to give you that flexibility across the different kinds of server infrastructures. So let's drill down a level. In terms of what are we supporting in terms of Linux and Unix operating systems, six different Linux distros that we hear primarily from our enterprise customers as what you're running production workloads on. So we're not going after the desktop Linuxes. We're not going after the hobbyists. So you don't see Slackware. You don't see the Hannah Montana Linux up there. We're going after those. There really is a Hannah Montana Linux. We're going after those that you would be running enterprise production workloads on. And then in the Unix space, of course, with Operations Manager and Configuration Manager, having coverage for AIX and HPUX and Solaris. So that's kind of the broad scope of what we're going after here. Let's now talk about running and deploying Linux. So running means running Linux on Hyper-V, running Linux on your physical hardware, and then deploying Linux using Virtual Machine Manager or the Azure Pack. Linux Integration Services, this is the component that we refer to as these are the device drivers for Linux that let Linux run on Hyper-V. Microsoft has developers that are writing Linux device drivers. We're contributing that code into the upstream Linux kernel. And then we work with the Linux distro vendors to get that code down into the individual Linux distros. And we've been doing this for a little while now. You can see we go back to, you know, all the way back to 5.5 on the Red Hat and CentOS series. We've got the new Red Hat 7.0 supported now. We work with Red Hat to get these certified by Red Hat. You can see that on the Red Hat website. And you can see the variety of different versions that we support here. Slash 12, I think, is just on the verge of shipping, if it hasn't shipped already this week. 14.10 on the Ubuntu side has also come out this month in October. And Oracle Linux 7.0 has also shipped here just recently. So we're continuing to stay very up-to-date in the new Linux distro versions as they come out. From a support standpoint, if you're running Linux on Hyper-V, if you've got a problem, it's just a generic Linux problem, you can't get your cron job to run like it's supposed to, contact your Linux distro vendor. That's what you've got support with that distro vendor for. But if it's an issue with running Linux on Hyper-V, you know, then you have the opportunity to either contact that distro vendor, because we've worked with those distro vendors, or to contact Microsoft to help get resolution of that kind of a problem. So this is the core capability for running Linux on Hyper-V as a guest operating system, you know, right alongside your Windows guests on Hyper-V. In the deploying Linux space, of course, Virtual Machine Manager, VMM, provides that fabric management, manages all the virtual machines, administers the hosts, the networks, you know, puts that whole thing together. If you've played with VMM at all on the Windows side of the world, of course, we have VM templates. We have service templates, and I'll show you how those work in the Linux space here to deploy those VMs and to manage those VMs and services. And then the same thing on the Azure Pack. That's your tenant interface into how your business users might allocate new VMs for workloads, or if you're a host, or how your end customers might allocate VMs to give you that familiar Windows Azure interface, and again, allow you to easily create a VM from a gallery. And then to leverage that VMM fabric underneath to actually create the VM and to do the management. So in some sense, VMM gives you that IT administrator interface into managing your fabric, while Azure Pack, of course, gives you that tenant interface. And both of those interfaces work for Linux just like they do for the Windows side of the world. If we drill down a little bit, one of the key things we've done in VMM, and we didn't really have to do a whole lot to make it work with Linux, but if you're used to doing things with Windows, of course, you're going to sysprep that Windows image. Then you can take that sysprepped Windows image and make, you know, 10 VMs, 50 VMs, 100 VMs from that image. And each VM will get a unique identity and get unique host name, IP address, etc. That sysprep mechanism does not exist on the Linux side. And so one of the key things we've done with VMM is to add a little bit of a Linux agent that you make as part of your Linux image. That agent communicates with VMM, and it effectively does the sysprep process. It does the personalization of that Linux image so that when you take that template and you make 10 VMs from it or 50 VMs, they'll all get unique identities. And so that's the key thing that we've done. Within VMM, the hardware profile is the same as it is on the Windows side. You can configure your IP addresses, configure your MAC addresses. The OS profile is a little different for Linux than it is for Windows. And so this is one of the key places that we've done Linux-specific work. So Linux, you have the root password, and people often want to use SSH keys to log into their Linux system to validate. And so we provided that kind of capability. And then I'll show a demo here in a second of these run once command lines that allow you to do additional configuration of your Linux VM once it's been deployed. The Azure Pack, of course, exposes the same VMM templates that you have in Virtual Machine Manager. Those show up as gallery templates in the Azure Pack. And then we also, in the VM roles, the VM role authoring tool gives you the ability to construct Linux VM roles to include the run once command lines that you need to customize your Linux machine. And then, of course, these roles can be scaled in and out with the Azure Pack just like they can on the Windows side. Before we cut to a demo, let me mention Data Protection Manager as well. If you're running Linux on Hyper-V, we now have the ability, as of the 2012 R2 release and with the latest Linux distros, to do live backups of Linux virtual machines running on Hyper-V. We manage this by having Hyper-V cooperate with the Linux integration services, with the drivers that we've added into Linux, to cause the file system buffers to get flushed when we're going to do a backup. And though this gives us a file system consistent backup of that Linux VM. And this all happens, you know, in the matter of maybe 100 milliseconds, a couple hundred milliseconds, so that you effectively get a live backup. You don't have your workloads get paused. You don't have to stop or pause the VM. And so you get that full consistent file system consistent backup. You can restore full VMs. We don't have the ability at this point to restore individual files from a Linux VM like you can do on the Windows side. So this is one of those gaps that's still there for backup on the Linux side. All right, I'm going to cut over to a demo here. This is unfortunately not going to be a live demo. My demo system's back in Redmond. We had a storm a couple of days ago, and machines did not come back again, and I lost the hard drive. So the good news is I have recordings, and so I'm going to walk through a recorded demo here instead of the live demo. As you can see in this case, this is the Virtual Machine Manager console. We're looking at virtual machine templates here. We have a number of different operating systems, Red Hat and CentOS. If we look at the properties of the of this CentOS template, we have the hardware configuration. This looks just like it does on the Windows side, right? You're going to go through, you can configure the network, you can configure the IDE device. In this case, we're pointing to a VHD that has CentOS 6 installed into it. So that's all just like it would be on the Windows side. This is the part, of course, that's a little different for Linux. We have identity information, and there's a root credentials, in fact, where you can specify the SSH key. This is the part that's a little bit Linux-specific. And then we have time zone, same as on the Windows side. And then we have these run once commands. These command lines are Linux command lines. They're going to get executed in the new VM once the network is up and running. And so these command lines can go out to an external repository, grab content, download a package, install it into your Linux system in order to increase that, in order to customize the configuration in the particular way that you want to, that goes beyond just what's in the image. So we're going to cancel out of this at this point. And then let's go take a look at a service template that is based on one of these images. We'll go check the service templates area here. We've got the DinnerNow accounting app. So this is a service template. It's got two VMs in it, both of which are Linux VMs. You could have mixed. You can also mix Linux and Windows VMs in the same service template. One of these is the database tier, and then the other tier is the web tier. If we look at the properties of the database tier, you can specify the OS configuration just like you would before. This is an interesting point here in the identity. I've got two VMs. I'm going to need somehow to link them together. They're going to need to be able to find each other. And so what I can specify is the host name here, rather than being hard-coded in the template, this is a service setting. The at signs at the beginning and the end specify a service setting. And so the we'll see in a second how that service setting is specified that allows the host name to be picked at the time that you do deployment, and then allows that host name to be found from the other tier as well. So here's the web tier. It's going to talk to the database. And if we look at the OS configuration here and look at that last line in the run once commands, we also have that at DB hostname at sign. And so we're going to do string substitution into that command line before it executes, so that whatever is specified as the host name, this web tier then will be able to find that database tier based on plugging that name into the script. So this is a very interesting mechanism that we've provided there to allow you to make that connection using these service settings. So we'll cancel out. Oh, this tier also, being the web tier, can be scaled out. So we're going to set this one, I think, to a maximum of 5 as the web tier. And then we're actually going to do a deployment. So we're going to deploy this service. It's got two Linux VMs in it. We'll give it a name. We'll click OK. And then this is going to pop up the UI now where I have to specify that DB hostname. So this is a service setting. Again, just like the UI would be on the Windows side for a service setting. We'll give this LabDB3 as the name, and then we'll hit the deploy button. And so this will go off now and spin up two VMs, both Linux, based on the underlying VM templates there. And we'll go into the demo of the corporate cloud here. And if we look at the services, we've now got a Dinner Now accounting service that's coming up. We've got the web tier and the database tier, two computers that are now being virtual machines that are being created. And those run once scripts will let them be linked together and find each other. So that's the end of that demo. This is, of course, VMM console, more of the IT admin view. Let's take a look at what you see in the Windows Azure pack. So here is a, if we look at all the items, we've got a web app that's deployed here. Let's take a look at creating a new. We can create a standalone virtual machine. We'll go to the gallery and take a look at what's available in the gallery. And you'll notice that the VHDXs and the templates, these are exactly the ones that are in VMM. So those are reflected forward and made available to your tenants or your end users in the Azure pack. And you can provide the standard kind of information here. Again, SSH key, because this is a Linux VM. Connect to a network, just like you would with a Windows machine. And this will spin up a SLES 11 VM. Now, we're going to cancel out of that. And now let's go take a look at spinning up a VM role and the additional information that you, as an IT admin, can define for your tenants to use in the Linux space. So we've defined this role called a CentOS 6 LAMP role. It's got the Apache web server. It's got PHP installed. And again, this UI now is specified by the VM role authoring tool. And we'll take a look at that in a minute here and let you see how this UI is specified and what parameters your end user has to provide as part of creating this. So we can specify the computer pattern name, be the LAMP, you know, 000. We're going to give it a different name here in this case. And again, the SSH public key shows up because this is part of a Linux configuration. And we have MySQL on this box as well. We're not going to fill in the public key here. We have MySQL on this box, and so we need to provide a MySQL password. And so again, you can define these dialogues and define how that password is processed here. Now we're going to cancel out of this. Let's just take a look around a second here. Drill down to the existing app that's already deployed. The usual Azure Pack dashboard. You can see the configuration. We have one instance deployed at this point of this particular configuration of this role, each of which it has one core that's running. You can see, again, the operating system that shows up. If we look at the scale factor, now we can take this slider and say, hey, we're going to go from 1 to 2. We will click OK, say yes, we're going to do this scale out. And behind the scenes now, Virtual Machine Manager is going to spin up another instance of this particular VM. So that we'll have two instances. They'll be hooked into the load balancer appropriately. And again, if we go back to the Virtual Machine Manager console, you'll see now that we have LAMP 002 being spun up here, created as a new VM. Both part of the same availability set handled by Virtual Machine Manager and the fabric management underneath there. And I think it takes a minute for this to come up. We still only see one instance at this point. Let's go take a look at the VM role authoring tool. This allows you to specify that UI contents. We're going to open up what's called the ResDef package, which defines the basics for what this UI is going to look like, the different parameters that we want your tenant to provide when they spin up one of these VMs. And we can say that this is a Linux machine so that we have the right set of settings there. And we're also then going to give this a minute. We're going to open up the Res extension package. And if we look here, we've got an additional parameter, which is the a bunch of run once command lines we're going to specify. Here's the parameter for the SQL root password. So this is causes that UI to pop up that says, hey, I need you to provide a SQL password there. And then you'll notice that that reference to that password field gets used down here in the run once command lines as a argument to the MySQL admin command to set the root password for MySQL. So this is how you can use the role authoring tool to create the configurations that you want your tenants, your end users to have, and how we've taken that and made that work for Linux with the same level of flexibility that you have for Windows. So that kind of wraps up the first section on running Linux, deploying Linux, the different configurations that you can do either with VMM or with the Windows Azure Pack. So let's shift now and talk about managing and monitoring Linux. And I'm going to talk about three different areas here. First is Configuration Manager. Then we're going to talk about desired state configuration for Linux. And of course, that's new in the vNext release. There's a preview that's out now, but that will officially ship as part of vNext. And then Operations Manager. We've got a number of new things in Operations Manager as well that are coming in the vNext release. So if we focus on Configuration Manager to start with, just a quick recap from an architectural standpoint. So Configuration Manager has a number of server roles, the site server, that distribution point, management points, so on and so forth. All of those are the same. We didn't have to change those to make this work for Linux. What we've done is implemented a new Config Manager client that runs on your Linux or your Unix computers. And this client is equivalent essentially to the CCM exec on the Windows machines. And in fact, on Linux, we named it CCM exec just so there wouldn't be any confusion about what it was. It communicates back with the Config Manager infrastructure, the site server, the MP, the DP, just like a Windows machine was. So the Linux machine makes a request into the management point, gets a response back. Same thing with the distribution point. So no change in the fundamental architecture there. The Windows client, of course, is based heavily on WMI, and there is no WMI on Linux, so what are we going to do? And what we've done is we've taken OMI. This is the a SIM server. It's an open source SIM server, open management infrastructure. And this is the equivalent of WMI on Windows, and so we've implemented that for Linux, and then we've implemented providers that are the equivalent of the WMI providers on Windows. Those same providers we have implemented a key subset of those for Linux machines. That is then built on the platform abstraction layer, which is where we deal with all the differences in the different Linux and Unix distros, and then, of course, running directly and talking to the underlying hardware operating system. So in terms of Config Manager on Linux and Unix, Config Manager has been around a long time, has a lot of features. These are the ones that we have implemented for Linux and Unix. So you've got hardware inventory. You've got the ability to find what applications are installed on that Linux computer. We've got software deployment to push a new package out to a Linux computer. Integrated reporting, all of that kind of that's built into Config Manager works for Linux and Unix as well. Some of the Config Manager areas, like OS deployment on the bare metal hardware, not implemented for Linux. We do have requests for that. Another area is the desired configuration management or the settings management. It's part of Config Manager. That's not implemented for Linux. Some of these areas that are not implemented also are very much client desktop oriented, given our server focus. Things like internet-based client management, you know, for your laptop that's at Starbucks or whatever. You just don't do that with servers, so some of these things really aren't relevant in the server world, and that's why we've not implemented those. But this gives you a quick view of kind of where we stand on the Linux and Unix capabilities. The hardware inventory, of course, gives you, with the Resource Explorer, you can see the inventory for an individual machine. Show that in a demo here. And we use the same inventory table. So if you've got memory size, for example, that's going into the same inventory table as it is for your Windows machines. So any of the queries that you have built, the reports in Config Manager, all of that works for your Linux and Unix machines, just like it would on the Windows machines, because it's all based off the same tables. So you create collections of computers based on that hardware inventory machine, inventory information. And so if you were to create a collection of all the machines with greater than 8 gigs of memory, you'd get both your Windows and your Linux and your Unix machines in that collection. And then, of course, inventory data can be viewed in aggregate form in the Config Manager reports that are built in. Software deployment. This is the course. You can deploy applications onto your Linux machine. You can deploy updates onto Linux machines, because Linux updates are just, again, additional new versions, new RPM files on Red Hat, new dev files on Ubuntu and Debian. You can deploy your OS patches. And then, of course, you can run arbitrary maintenance scripts. So you can go out and run a shell script, just like you can go out and run a Windows command line on a Windows machine. So you've got full flexibility here, just like you do on the Windows side. Architecturally, the software deployment, this is typical Windows configuration for systems for Config Manager. You've got your admin UI talking to your site server. You've got a management point, which is your MP, your distribution point. If you have Windows computers, you're going to create a package in a program. You're going to advertise, or you're going to deploy that package in program. The MP then is going to get that policy information, goes down to the Windows machines. The Windows machines will pull down the content from the distribution point. That'll get installed during the maintenance window, if those are defined on your Windows machines. And then you'll send a status message back. So if you're familiar with Config Manager, you know this should look very familiar to you. This is the way it works on the Windows side. When we throw Linux and Unix into the picture, it works the same way. You're going to create a package in a program. Now, the package is going to be a little different. It's probably going to be an RPM file or a tar file, you know, rather than an MSI. And the program command line is going to be a Linux or a Unix command line. But the overall process is the same. You then advertise or deploy that package program. The policy is going to come down to the Linux and Unix computer from the same management point. One management point can serve both Windows and your Linux and Unix machines. The content's going to come down from a distribution point. Again, same content, same DP. So your RPM file is going to exist on that Windows DP. You'll pull down that content to the Linux machine. We have implemented maintenance windows, so the maintenance windows work just like they do on Windows machines. So you can say, only do this installation between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m. on Saturday night. And then we'll send a status message back. So if you've targeted 50 machines, you'll get your status messages back, and you'll find out, you know, 48 of them succeeded, and one of them failed, and one of them you didn't hear from. So, you know, you'll get that same kind of process as you do on the Windows side. So this whole, the Linux and Unix editions, it's simply another client. And so they dovetail into the same console and UI, the same hardware infrastructure. You don't have to add any more server roles. And the same management paradigms, the way that you interact with it from the Config Manager console is the same as you would with a Windows machine. So what's new in Config Manager vNext? If you've worked with Config Manager Linux, Unix clients so far, you know today they're packaged as a tar file. We've had a lot of customer requests to make these native package formats. So RPMs on Red Hat and CentOS, PKG on Solaris, for example. One of the other things we've heard about is this OMI instance that we use for WMI replacement. Ops Manager also uses OMI, and we actually had two different instances if you were using both Ops Manager and Config Manager. Those are now combined. Had a number of customer requests about 80 site boundaries. So these Linux and Unix machines, of course, are not domain joined by default, and so 80 sites don't work. And we've provided a mechanism for you to ask that your Linux machine pretend like it's part of a particular AD site from a boundary standpoint in doing content distribution. And then, of course, we've got we always keep up with the latest Linux distros. So these are new things coming in Config Manager vNext. All right, I'm going to shift now. We'll do a quick demo of what this looks like in Configuration Manager. Here we are in the devices node. You can see I've got a lot of Linux machines. I've got a HPUX server up there at the top. I've got a Solaris box down here at the bottom. So these Linux machines are grouped in with all the Windows machines and the All Systems collection. And then you can form collections of individual Linux machines based on their computer type. So here's a bunch of SUSE machines, for example, that are Linux machines. We're going to start the Resource Explorer here just to take a look at the hardware inventory that we're collecting on these Linux computers. These are the 12 different hardware classes that we've implemented in OMI. You can see the same kind of fields coming back that you would see on your Windows hardware inventory machines. This is the PC BIOS class, for example. Just let this walk through a couple of the disk partitions. Disk drives, you'll notice that's dev SDA, so we're picking up path names that are Linux appropriate for those disk drives. We look at services. These are the Linux services that are running. You know, the Windows service concept sort of maps over to Linux in terms of what's running under init. These are the processes that were running at the last time we ran hardware inventory. And this is a particularly interesting area here were the installed applications. On the Windows side, of course, you can dump out the add remove programs list, right? And that's effectively dumping out the MSI database on a Windows machine. So on this SUSE machine, we're dumping out the RPM database. So these are all the RPM packages that are installed. And you know, one of the interesting scenarios here, for example, is to filter based on OpenSSL package version that you have installed to find those that have the Heartbleed bug, for example, that you need to update with the latest version of OpenSSL. And in fact, if we look at this collection, this has got some membership rules that are based on OpenSSL version that was picked up as part of that hardware inventory. So you can form a collection that has all of the machines that need to be upgraded to the new version of OpenSSL because of the Heartbleed bug, for example. Reporting. So let's take a look at a couple of reports that these are standard config manager reports. We're going to pick up a couple of the operating system related reports here and see. These would normally be used in a pure Windows environment just to see the different versions of Windows that you have installed. But in this case, we're going to see that we can choose SUSE Linux here as one of the values. Yes, we'll get there. Here we go. Yeah, we'll pick the SUSE Linux. And we can see the different computers that are running the SUSE operating system. So same report. We're working off the same inventory database tables in Config Manager. And now we can see that that's extended and works for Linux. If we do a count of the operating system versions, this one's particularly interesting. We can see we've got some Windows machines in here. We've got one HP UX. We've got a Solaris, you know, SunOS. Some CentOS, some SUSE, et cetera, as part of what we're managing here with Config Manager. Now let's go take a look at doing a software deployment. So we go to the packages area. I've got the Java runtime environment, JRE for Linux. This is set up as a package. And in fact, if we look at the properties, you'll see that this is just an RPM package that's living out the data source here. This is living out on the C colon drive. And so we've created a package out of that RPM file. And then we've defined a program for that RPM file. And the command line, of course, is just a standard Linux RPM command line with the various options to do that installation. One of the things that has been updated is the list of supported platforms within your Config Manager console UI. So now you can see not only can you choose different Windows versions, you can choose different SUSE versions, Solaris, Ubuntu. The list has gotten a lot longer than it used to be now that we have added all the different Unix and Linux versions in there. And so let's do a deployment of that particular package. We're going to target that at a collection that contains the SUSE Linux computers. This is going to install the new version of the Java runtime environment. I've already got that package replicated out to a distribution point, so don't have to select anything there. This is a required package. For demo purposes, we're going to do this. And of course, all the scheduling mechanisms that Config Manager supports are possible, but we're going to do these as soon as possible now for demo purposes. Click Next. Most of these other options, there's a number of these options that have to do with the user interface and so forth that we are not implemented on Linux, so we just kind of skip through those. And we're going to do that deployment. So that deployment has now been created on the Config Manager side, targeted at that collection of SUSE servers. So let's go take a look now at the deployment status here. So we now have a new deployment in the list. JRE for Linux, targeted at the SUSE Linux computers. And if we actually go to one of the SUSE Linux computers here that's in that collection, we're at a shell command prompt, and we can see that Java is not installed here. On the Linux machine, I can't find Java. Now, as you normally have to do in a Config Manager demo, the client, of course, on this Linux machine only wakes up once an hour to check for policy. So we're going to go kick the client and say, hey, go check for policy now. And so we have this command line in the Linux world, just like you can do on your Windows machine, that say, go check for policy right now. So the ccmexec-rs policy tells it to go check for policy. So he's talking to the management point. We're going to do a tail. This is the log file that's created by the Config Manager client on the Linux box. Really a lot of technical detail here you really shouldn't have to take much look at, except if you're trying to debug a problem or see what's going on there. So we'll give this just a minute to allow the Config Manager client to get policy, to download that JRE from the management point or from the distribution point, and then to install that Java runtime environment onto this Linux computer. So I think this is going to pause here for just a second, and then we'll check and see if Java has been successfully installed onto the computer. Yes, let's go. Here we go. Which Java? And yes, we now have Java installed on this machine as a successful software distribution. And if we go back to the Config Manager console now and take a look, we'll actually see in the deployment status that we have successfully installed that Java package on one of the targeted SUSE Linux machines. So that was a successful use of software distribution onto a set of Linux computers. All right, let's talk about desired state configuration for Linux. DSC, of course, is a new capability that was introduced for Windows as part of the 2012 R2 release. DSC is a core mechanism for configuring a computer, basic functions to do a set function to say make that computer have the desired configuration that I want. It's a declarative a statement about what I want that configuration to be. So I can do a set function. I can do a get function to return information about the current configuration. I can do a test function to get a Boolean result as to is the configuration conformant to what I specified or not. New in vNext, of course, is that will allow you to do DSC against Linux servers as well. Now, in the Linux world, there already exists some capabilities along this line. Puppet and Chef have been popular for a long time in a similar kind of space here. And so people say, well, are we trying to compete against Puppet and Chef? And really the answer is no. We're not trying to compete against these guys. It really depends upon what sort of environment, what sort of commonality is most important in your environment. If you're in a Microsoft cloud world, you're running both Windows and Linux in that environment, and you want commonality between those two, DSC will be a good choice. That's a key technology for Microsoft going forward, and making it work on both Windows and on Linux is a key thing for us. On the other hand, if you're working in an environment where you have other Linux systems that are not part of the Microsoft environment, and it's important for you to have commonality there, by all means, make use of Puppet, make use of Chef, make use of these other open source tools. We're going to make sure that in the Microsoft environment, whether it's private cloud, whether you're in Azure in the public cloud, that you can make use of those other open source tools as well. So DSC is there, great tool for commonality between Windows and Linux. We're not going to force you to use it. So what are we doing? What we've done is we've taken what's called the local configuration manager component of DSC, and we've ported that to Linux. And then we've implemented a bunch of Linux resource providers. So you see those in the table there on the right. Many of these providers correspond to the providers that exist on the Windows side of the world. NXFile corresponds to the file provider in the Windows world. We've prefixed these with NX to indicate Linux. Some of these are Linux-specific, so the concept of groups for access control is a Linux-specific concept, and so we have a resource provider for that. And so we're providing this set of built-in resource providers. They're mostly written in Python with a C++ wrapper, and there is a CTP release of this. It's a preview that's available out on GitHub, but we're going to continue to update this. We'll take this well beyond what's in that preview as we come to the release of Windows Server vNext. From an architectural standpoint, what does this look like? We have a piece of this that is PowerShell, runs on the Windows Server machine. So you take your DSC package definition, that's your statement about what do I want this to look like, some MOF providers definitions that are come from Microsoft, and those get combined to produce the DSC input MOF. And then PowerShell will make a connection to the Linux computer using the sim session object, and that'll connect to the OMI server. It'll send the MOF file down to the Linux machine, and then the local config manager, DSC local config manager on the Linux machine, will take that MOF file and will make use of the individual resource providers to make it true on that Linux machine. So you provide the DSC package definition. The rest of this comes from Microsoft, and you can see which parts run on the Windows server and which parts run on the Linux server. And you'll get output. You'll change the state of the Linux server. You'll get response information back into PowerShell, did it succeed or not. And then we'll keep some logs on the Linux machine as well if you're trying to debug what's going on there. So let's take a quick look at a demo here of DSC for Linux. We're going to start out here. The target Linux machine here is Lab Demo 01. We actually tried to browse a web page. Nothing is there at this point. Let's start the demo, because what we're going to use DSC for is to push out an Apache web server package and a WordPress package so that that's installed and appropriately configured on that Linux machine. Now we're looking, oops, I hit the wrong button here. We're looking at a PowerShell script that is the configuration that you want to have on that machine. This particular PowerShell script, we have some scripts that we're going to, some shell scripts, in fact, that we're going to bring into this configuration. And we've kept them in separate text files just because they're easier to edit that way rather than put the scripts directly into the PowerShell. But we'll see a couple of examples here. This is a shell script that's going to do the test function for WordPress and tell me whether or not WordPress is installed out there. There's another script that we've got here that's going to do the set function on WordPress to get WordPress installed. So in cases where we don't have a built-in resource provider to do exactly what you want, you can always escape out to a script that you incorporate. And we're also going to bring in the WordPress configuration. Again, this is standard WordPress config file in PHP format. Now let's get down to the real work here. So this is the configuration of the WordPress server. This statement here is what imports the resource provider definition. So back to the architectural diagram, that's the orange box that Microsoft is providing. And then we're actually going to get down to actually what do we want this computer to look like. This is the declarative portion of DSC for that particular node. So we want to have Apache installed, and we're specifying the scripts to be used for the get, the set, and the test function. And we want to have an Apache service running. So we're going to use the service resource that's been created for Linux to specify a service that we want to have running, running under the init controller, which is the standard Linux service controller. Same thing for MySQL, where we have the scripts to do the install, and we have defined the MySQL service that we want to have running there. And then finally, we have the WordPress configuration, to some scripts to get that installed and set up as well. Now we're going to move to a couple of files and directories that we want to have created. So we want to have that particular file that's present. We want to have a particular set of content in that file. We want to have the uploads directory be present. So we've got a declaration, again, using the NX file resource provider for what we want to have there. We have the mode, the Linux permissions mode that we want to have on that file or that directory. Same thing for the cache directory and for the WordPress config directory. So this is the declarative statement about what I want the configuration to be. And what we're going to do now is we're actually going to execute this PowerShell script and it's going to output the MOF file. So this is again happening on the Windows machine. And there's the MOF file that it has output. And just to take a quick look at that MOF file, this set of technical details you can pretty much ignore. This gets generated for you. This just to show you what has been generated based on that previous script. Now we're going to do the real work of actually doing the configuration. We're going to connect to the Linux machine with a sim session. And then we're going to do start DSC configuration. So this is going to make it so on the Linux configuration. And so we've kicked off that PowerShell script. This takes about 40 seconds to run, to download and install Apache, to download and install WordPress, create those files. This is pretty fast. And if it's, when we do comparisons with Linux versus Windows, the Linux side runs a lot faster than the Windows side, much to the chagrin of the Windows people when they're demoing this. But that's the some of the benefits on the Linux side of the world at this point. So we give this about 35 or 40 seconds to run, and that configuration will be happening out there on that Linux computer. Okay, so it's completed. Just for as an example, we're now going to run the get function just to kind of see what's out there. So we get all the details about each of the configurations that we specified, so we can find out what's out there. In fact, now if we go do hit the web page, you'll see that we actually get a response. PHP is installed with Apache, and WordPress is installed, and we get a response there from that web page as well. So that configuration operation worked correctly. Now let's go into the Linux box here, and we'll see that Apache's running. We have the httpd, and its config is there. Let's stop that service. We're going to stop httpd from running. And now if we go back into PowerShell and do a test function, we're going to see that, so the test function is going to go out to the Linux box, going to check the configuration, and it's going to come back as false. The configuration is not correct now because HTTP is not running. So we're going to run the apply function again, which is to force the configuration back to being correct. And then if we run test, we'll see that it's in fact true this time. And it only took half a second to force the configuration back to the correct settings, because we're not going to reinstall everything. It figures out, oh, most things are running. All we have to do is restart that HTTP daemon in order to bring it into conformance. And now if we go and look on the Linux box again and check the status of HTTP, we'll see that, in fact, it's running at this point. So the... That's kind of the quick view of DSC for Linux, being able to set and get the functionality, get the configuration. Let's shift finally now to Operations Manager and talk about the way that we have Ops Manager set up. If you're using Ops Manager for Windows, the Windows agent, the Ops Manager agent for Windows has the health service built into it. It will does most of the real work out there on the Windows machine. And I want to point out that architecturally it's different on the Linux side. The Ops Manager agent for Linux is another OMI server with some providers that plug into it. And we communicate with that agent via SSH to do agent maintenance functions to get it installed in the first place. Or we use HTTP to do the actual monitoring function. We use WSMAN protocol to bring the raw data back to the Ops Manager management server. And all of the smarts happens really on the Ops Manager management server instead of out on the Linux box. So this is architecturally just different than what it is on the Windows side. Makes it much simpler to be portable across the different Linux and Unix computers. If we look at what's in the box for monitoring Linux machines, monitoring CPU, monitoring memory, swap space, monitoring disks, inode counts, which are unique to Linux, for example, we monitor those, network performance, monitor processes, monitor log files. So very similar to what you get on the Windows side of the world, but made customized in particular for what you're doing with Linux machines. So you get all these kind of monitoring capabilities out of the box. You know, how do you customize? What can you do to extend that to your particular environment? We have log file monitors, UI in the ops console to create monitors for custom log files from your application. You can monitor particular processes that may be part of your application, whether you're monitoring a Java process or some other custom application process. One of the things that's going to be new in vNext is the ability to specify full scripts to build custom monitors from. The command line, shell command line rules and monitors has been there in the product, but the new script-based rules and monitors is new. Multi-line scripts, and you can shebang them to say, hey, I want this script to run in Perl, I want this script to run in PHP and Python, So you've got a great deal of additional flexibility there in terms of custom monitors and performance monitors and health monitors that you build using the Config Manager console. So all of this can be done directly in the console now. Of course, extensibility via partners. We have third-party companies that build management packs for a variety of things that Microsoft doesn't build management packs for. Some of the database servers, Z-Linux, Linux running on a mainframe, AS400 and ZOS even can be plugged into Config Manager. Some of these partners are here at the show as well today. What else is new in Ops Manager vNext? So again, we're sharing the OMI installation. We've done some work when you're doing these shell command lines or these scripts to make them multi-threaded. So if you have one that runs a little bit long, the others won't pile up behind it. This is just a performance improvement. A couple of things that were requested by customers when you're discovering a Linux machine. You have to run the discovery wizard or you're using PowerShell. And you need to specify credentials. And now you can use run as credentials that are stored so that whatever IT admin is doing that work doesn't have direct exposure to those credentials. He doesn't need to know what those credentials are because they're stored in Ops Manager now. Gives you a little more security in your IT environment. And some additional filters on file system types. And then the last one, we've had a number of customers who've wanted to create diagnostics and recoveries in Ops Manager. And for Linux, in the current release, you actually have to do management pack authoring to make that happen. In vNext, we've added UI. So that this functionality now is completely on par with what you can do on the Windows side in terms of creating diagnostics and recovery. So this was a gap on the Linux side that we have now filled in the vNext release. The other major area where we're doing new stuff in vNext is in open source application monitoring. We've had Java app servers available to be monitored, had management packs for those now since the 2012 release. For WebSphere, WebLogic, Tomcat, JBoss. But we're now, Microsoft is producing management packs for Apache and for MySQL databases. So those will be new as part of the vNext release to monitor the Apache web server and to monitor the MySQL database. So we'll do a demo on the Apache web server. That one is mostly done at this point and demoable. The MySQL one is still under construction as we work on the vNext release here. The quick summary, of course, on the JEE app servers. We're monitoring the basic health of the app server. We're monitoring memory usage. Garbage collection in the Java world is very important, and the running modules. We can also monitor custom mBeans. So if you have a Java application that's running, and maybe it's got a queue length that you want to monitor, and it's writing that queue length to a management bean, an mBean in Java world, we can monitor that. UR4 for 2012 R2 just released yesterday, and we now have the updates there for JBoss 7 and 8. We'd had a number of requests for that. We were behind schedule on getting those done, so we're now up to date on our Java application servers. If we talk about Apache for a minute here, so this is the new management pack. This is implemented as an OMI provider that we have plugged into the Apache module structure. So we can dynamically discover those servers, and we can monitor the server itself, the virtual host. And pretty important, we monitor the SSL certs, so that as the SSL certs approach their expiration date, we can generate an alert. You know, you got 14 days now before your cert's going to expire, so that you know and can keep that up to date. So architecturally, again, we've implemented within the Apache web server the mod simprov. As a module, and then that talks to the OMI server where we've implemented a provider that comes into OMI, and then, of course, the WSMAN interface coming in from the Ops Manager management point or management server. And the ModSim and the Apache, they use shared memory to communicate with each other. So this is pretty high performance. You're not going to be impacted on your HTTP or your Apache server performance by using the monitoring that we're doing here. So let's shift and do a demo of the Apache web server monitoring. Here's where we are in the Ops Manager console. This is the vNext version of Ops Manager, and it's actually running on the Windows Server technical preview. No active alerts at this point related to Apache servers. We've provided a dashboard view. And again, this is all customizable in the Ops Manager console using standard Ops Manager capabilities. We've just provided some of these examples out of the box with the management pack so that you can kind of see what you get with your Apache server monitoring. We'll take a look here at the Apache servers that are listed. We've got four different Linux machines that have an Apache server installed on them. And if we take a look at an individual, the properties of one of these, we'll get a bunch of detailed information about the configuration of the Apache server. The config file, all the modules that are installed on that particular Apache server, for example. And then we can take it down to the next detail level. So we've got, you know, three virtual hosts on NX14, and we can see the properties of each virtual host that's been configured, and in particular the document root for that virtual host on that Apache web server, where the log files are configured for, et cetera. And then finally, we'll take a look at the SSL certificates. We have the expiration date there, so that one's going to expire a little bit later here in November, for example. If we take a look at a diagram view, so again, we can relate all these components together in the standard way that Ops Manager does this. We can see that I've got a top-level Apache server. I've got three virtual hosts underneath it, that Apache server. And then I've got the certificate, the cert that's exposed there in diagram view. In the same way, same information that you saw in the other view. This just shows the relationships here in diagram view. Let's take a look at, so this is one is interesting because you see that it does not have a check mark, and that's because it does not have the Apache SIM module installed in that particular Apache instance. So we've created a task over here on the right to push out that Apache SIM module, and we can run that task, and that will communicate with the OMI server out there, and we'll push out that appropriate SIM module so that that Apache server will come fully under management by Ops Manager. All right, let's take a look here. If we go take a look at the Health Explorer for a particular Apache server, you can see the full range of the things that are being monitored. The virtual host availability, just the overall top-level server monitor status, individual virtual hosts, that the configuration passes the checks. I'll just let this run for a second and look at the percent busy. The total CPU, so we're taking the CPU utilization of all of the HTTPDs and adding that all up together to see what the impact is of the usage on the particular computer. And then we're checking the SSL. Again, that's what will go red if this, or get a warning at 14 days, go red if the certificate expires, for example. And then we have performance information, errors per minute, total host requests per second, et cetera, that we are collecting about our Apache servers. So I'm going to, in the interest of time here, I'm going to move on. You can see all of the information that is collected here about the Apache stuff. I'm going to wrap up here with just a brief statement about orchestration. System Center Orchestrator can automate Linux processes as well as Windows processes. It can orchestrate across VM deployments, Ops Manager Config Manager activities, alert recoveries. For example, Orchestrator can detect an alert has gone off in Ops Manager and then go do something to the target machine. And if that target machine is a Linux machine, then you can use the run SSH command activity within Orchestrator to make something happen on that Linux machine. And so you get the full integration using orchestration, not across just your Windows machines, but across your Linux and your Unix machines as well. I've got a demo here for Orchestrator, and I think in the interest of time here, I'm probably just going to go ahead and skip through that demo and go to the wrap-up. At a top level, I've given you kind of a broad overview. We've touched on Linux integration services running on Hyper-V. We've touched on VMM. We've touched on Config Manager, on Ops Manager, on Orchestrator, DPM, desired state configuration. You know, I hope you're getting the message that Microsoft is serious about doing this Linux stuff. Work's been going on for quite a while now. We're committed to running and managing Linux in their heterogeneous data center. This is something we do as part of our normal development cycle. Nothing goes on within the Microsoft development world now in Windows Server and System Center without somebody saying, you know, how are we going to make sure that this works for Linux as well as Windows these days? So this is an integral part of our offering. It really extends right alongside your Windows stuff. You've seen sort of the contrast between what we do with Windows and what we do with Linux and how we have brought those two together. And so, you know, yes, if you're a Windows administrator, we've got a lot of customers today who are doing their Linux stuff, running, deploying, managing, monitoring, right alongside their Linux machines, right alongside their Windows machines. So related content, there is a session at noon today that talks in more detail about running Linux and FreeBSD on Hyper-V. There's a patching and compliance management session with Linux and Unix with System Center on Friday. There's a running Linux in Microsoft Azure session tomorrow. That'll take you into the public cloud. I touched just a little bit on PowerShell and DSC today. So there's a session at some point, I think that's this afternoon, that's a full session on DSC to get more background if you're not familiar with that. And then, of course, a couple of hands-on labs that we've got to give you some hands-on experience in using System Center with Linux. And we have the booth on the show floor. I'll be down there most of the rest of the week here, so if you have further questions or topics, we'd love to hear from you there. So more information, get certified. Please complete an evaluation form. Hope this was a worthwhile session for you. And I will wrap it up there. So thank you very much. I'll be happy to take questions either at the microphone or we can stand around up front and chat if you have further follow-up questions. So thanks.